Welcome to Coco Club.
Coco Club is a radio program put on by the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio. Tune in to WHDD 91.9 each week and join me, Mrs. Sam, for a short story, a poem, some cocoa, and a sweet dessert. The recipe for each dessert will be posted the week before, so we can all try our hand in baking, or, in the case of this week, shaking, because we're making homemade ice cream, something new, and enjoy it as a family while we listen to a story. I will ask questions at the end of Coco Club to help every listener engage with each other about the story's meaning and what they liked about it. Please join us on social media to post photos of how your recipe turned out and tell us what you thought about the story at facebook.com/HotchkissLibrary. This week we are finishing The Snow Queen by Hans Christian Andersen. We left off with the flowers in the garden, and Gerda just remembered about the rose, which in turn reminded her of Kay, her lost friend. "Dear me, how long I have stayed," said Gerda. "Autumn is come. I must not rest any longer." And she got up to go further. Oh, how tender and wearied her little feet were. All around it looked so cold and raw. The long willow leaves were quite yellow, and the fog dripped from them like water. One leaf fell after the other. The sloes only stood full of fruit, which set one's teeth on edge. Oh, how dark and comfortless it was in the dreary world. Fourth story, The Prince and Princess. Gerda was obliged to rest herself again when, exactly opposite to her, a large raven came hopping over the white snow. He had long been looking at Gerda and shaking his head, and now he said, "Caw, caw, good day, good day." He could not say it better, but he felt a sympathy for the little girl. He asked her where she was going all alone. The word alone Gerda understood quite well, and felt how much was expressed by it. So she told the raven her whole story, and asked if he had not seen Kay. The raven nodded very gravely, and said, "It may be, it may be." "What, do you really think so?" cried the little girl, and she nearly squeezed the raven to death, so much did she kiss him.
"Gently, gently," said the raven. "I think I know. I think it may be little Kay. But he has now forgotten you for the princess."
"Does he live with a princess?" asked Gerda.
"Yes, listen," said the raven. "But it will be difficult for me to speak your language. If you could understand raven language, I can tell you better."
"No, I have not learnt it," said Gerda. "But my grandmother understands it, and she can speak gibberish, too. I wish I had learnt it."
"No matter," said the raven. "I will tell you as well as I can. However, caw, it will be bad enough."
And then he told her all he knew. In the kingdom where we now are, there lives a princess, who is extraordinarily clever, for she has read all the newspapers in the whole world, and has forgotten them again, so clever is she. She was lately, it is said, sitting on her throne, which is not very amusing after all, when she began humming an old tune, and it was just, "Oh, why should I not be married?" "That song is not without its meaning," said she, and so then she was determined to marry. But she would have a husband who knew how to give her an answer when he was spoken to, not one who looked only as if he were a great personage, for that was so tiresome. She then had all the ladies of the court drummed together, and when they heard her intention, all were very pleased, and said, "We are very glad to hear it. It is the very thing we are thinking of." "You may believe every word I say," the raven related to Gerda, "for I have a tame sweetheart that hops in the palace quite free, and it was she who told me all of this." The newspapers appeared forthwith with a border of hearts and the initials of the princess, and therein you might read that every good-looking young man was at liberty to come to the palace and speak to the princess, and he who spoke in such wise as showed he felt himself at home there, that one the princess would choose for her husband.
"Yes, yes," said the raven.
The raven continued, "You may believe it. It is as true as I am sitting here. People came in crowds, and there was a crush and a hurry.
but no one was successful either on the first or second day. They could all talk well enough when they were out in the street, but as soon as they came inside the palace gates and saw the guard richly dressed in silver, and the lackeys in gold on the staircase, and the large illuminated saloons, then they were abashed, and when they stood before the throne on which the princess was sitting, all they could do was repeat the last word they had uttered, and hear it again, and to hear it again did not interest her very much. It was just as if the people within were under a charm, and had fallen into a trance, till they came out again into the street. For then, oh then, they could chatter enough. There was a whole row of them, standing from the town gates to the palace. The raven had been there himself. They grew hungry and thirsty, but from the palace, caw, they got nothing whatever, not even a glass of water. Some of them, cleverest, it's true, had taken bread, caw, and butter, but none shared it with his neighbor, for each thought, let him look hungry, then the princess won't have him. But Kay, little Kay, said Gerda, when did he come? Was he among the number? Patience, patience, we just come to him, caw. The raven related that it was on the third day, when the little personage, without horse or equipage, came marching right boldly up to the palace. His eyes shone like yours, and he had beautiful long hair, but his clothes were very shabby. That was Kay, cried Gerda, in a voice of delight. Oh, now I found him! She clapped her hands for joy. He had a little knapsack on his back, said the raven. No, that was most certainly his sledge, said Gerda, for when he went away, he took his sledge with him. Maybe, maybe, said the raven. The raven had not examined him so minutely, but knew from his tame sweetheart that when he came into the courtyard of the palace and saw the bodyguard in silver, the lackeys on the staircase, that he was not in the least abashed. He nodded and said to them, "It must be very tiresome to stand on the stairs. For my part, I shall go in." The saloons were gleaming with lustres. Privy councillors and excellencies were walking about barefooted, and wore gold keys. It was enough to make anyone feel uncomfortable. His boots creaked loudly, too loudly, but still he was not at all afraid. "That's Kay for certain," said Gerda. "I know he had on new boots. I have heard them creaking in my grandmama's room." "Yes, they creaked," said the raven. On he went up boldly to the princess, who was sitting on a pearl as large as a spinning wheel. All the ladies of the court, with their attendants and attendants' attendants, and all the cavalries, with their gentlemen and their gentlemen's gentlemen, stood around. And nearer they stood to the door, the prouder they looked. It was hardly possible to look at the gentleman's gentleman, so very haughtily did he stand in the doorway. "Oh, it must have been terrible," said little Gerda. "Did Kay get the princess?"
"Were I not a raven, I would have taken the princess myself, caw, though I am promised." "It is said he spoke as well as I speak when I speak raven language. This I learned from my tame sweetheart, caw. He was bold and nicely behaved, and had not come to woo the princess, but only to hear her wisdom. She pleased him, and he pleased her."
"Yes, yes, for certain that was Kay," said Gerda. "He was so clever. He could reckon factions in his head. And won't you take me to the palace?"
"That is very easily said," said the raven. "But how are we to manage it?" "I'll speak to my tame sweetheart about it. She must advise us. For so much I must tell you, such a little girl as you will never get permission to enter."
"Oh, yes, I shall," said Gerda. "When Kay hears that I am here, he will come out directly to fetch me."
"Wait, wait for me on the steps," said the raven.
He moved his head backwards and forwards as he flew away. The evening was closing in when the raven returned.
"Caw, caw," said he. "She sends you her compliments, and here is a roll for you. She took it out of the kitchen, caw, where there is bread enough. You are hungry, no doubt. It is not possible for you to enter the palace, for you are barefooted. The guards in silver and the lackeys in gold would not allow it, but do not cry. You shall come in still. My sweetheart knows a little black stair that leads up to a bedchamber, and she knows where you can get the key of it. Caw!"
And they
wept into the garden in the large avenue, where one leaf was falling after the other, and when the lights in the palace had all gradually disappeared, the raven led little Gerda to the back door, which stood half open. Oh, how Gerda's heart beat with anxiety and longing. It was just as if she had been about to do something wrong, and yet she only wanted to know if little Kay was there. Yes, he must be there. She called to mind his intelligent eyes and his long hair, so vividly. She could quite see him as he used to laugh when they were sitting under the roses at home. He will, no doubt, be glad to see you, to hear what a long way you have come for his sake, to know how unhappy all at home were when he did not come back. Oh, what a fright and a joy it was! They were now on the stairs. A single lamp was burning there, and on the floor stood the tame raven, turning her head every side to look at Gerda, who bowed as her grandmother had taught her to do.
"My intended has told me so much good of you, my dear young lady," said the tame raven. "Your tale is very affecting. Caw! If you'll take the lamp, I will go before. We go straight on, for we shall meet no one."
"I think there is somebody just behind us," said Gerda, and something rushed past. It was like shadowy figures on the wall. Horses with flowing manes and thin legs. Huntsmen, ladies and gentlemen on horseback.
"They are only dreams," said the raven. "They come to fetch thoughts of the high personages to the chase. 'Tis well, for now you can observe them in bed all the better. But let me find Caw when you enjoy honor and distinction, and you possess a grateful heart."
That's not worth talking about, said the raven of the woods. They now entered the first saloon, which was of rose-colored satin, with artificial flowers on the wall. Here the dreams were rushing past, but they hastened by so quickly that Gerda could not see the high personages. One hall was more magnificent than the other. One, indeed, might be well abashed, and at last they came into the bedchamber. The ceiling of the room resembled a large palm tree with leaves of glass, of costly glass, and in the middle, from a thick golden stem, hung two beds, each of which resembled a lily. One was white, and in this lay the princess. The other was red, and it was here that Gerda was to look for little Kay. She bent back one of the red leaves, and saw a brown neck. Oh, that was Kay! She called him quite loud by the name, held the lamp toward him. The dreams rushed back again into the chamber. He awoke, turned his head, and it was not little Kay. The prince was only like him about the neck, but he was young and handsome. And out of the white lily leaves, the princess peeped too and asked what was the matter. Then little Gerda cried and told her the whole story and all that the ravens had done for her. "Poor little thing," said the prince and princess. They praised the ravens very much, and told them they were not at all angry with them, but they were not to do so again. However, they should have a reward. "You will fly about here at liberty," said. "Will you fly about here at liberty?" asked the princess. "Or would you like to have a fixed appointment as court ravens, with all the broken bits from the kitchen?" And both ravens nodded, and begged for a fixed appointment, for they thought of their old age, and said, "It is a good thing to have provision for our old days." And the prince got up and let Gerda sleep in his bed. More than this he could not do. She folded her little hands and thought, "How good men and animals are," and then fell asleep and slept soundly. All the dreams flew in again, and they now looked like angels. They drew a little sledge, and in which little Kay sat and nodded his head. But the whole was only a dream, and therefore it all vanished as soon as she awoke. The next day she was dressed from head to foot in silk and velvet. They offered to let her stay at the palace and lead a happy life, but she begged to have a little carriage and a horse in front, and for a small pair of shoes. Then she said she would again go forth in the wide world and look for Kay. Shoes and a muff were given to her. She was, too, dressed very nicely, and when she was about to set off, a new carriage stopped before the door. It was of pure gold, and the arms of the prince and princess shone like a star upon it, and the coachman, the footman, and the outriders, for the outriders were there, too, all wore golden crowns. The prince and princess assisted her into the carriage themselves, and wished her all the success. The raven of the woods, who was now married, accompanied her for the first 3 miles. He sat beside Gerda, for he could not bear riding backwards, and the other raven stood in the doorway and flapped her wings. She could not accompany Gerda, because she suffered from a headache, since she had a fixed appointment and ate so much. The carriage was lined up with sugar plums, and the seats were fruits and gingerbread. "Farewell, farewell," cried the prince and princess, and Gerda wept, and the raven wept. Thus passed the 1 miles, and then the raven bid her farewell, and this was the most painful separation of all. He flew into a tree, and beat his black wings as long as he could see the carriage that shone afar like a sunbeam. 5th story, The Little Robber Maiden. They drove through the dark wood, but the carriage shone like a torch, and it dazzled the eyes of the robbers, so they could not bear to look at it. "'Tis gold! 'Tis gold!" they cried. They rushed forward, seized the horses, knocked down the little postillion, the coachman, and the servants, and pulled little Gerda out of the carriage. "How plump, how beautiful she is! She must have been fed on nut kernels," said the old female robber, who had a long, scrubby beard and bushy eyebrows that hung down over her eyes. "She is as good as a fatted lamb. How nice she will be!" And then she drew out a knife, the blade of which shone so that it was quite dreadful to behold. "Oh!" cried the woman at the same moment. She had been bitten in the ear by her own little daughter, who hung at her back, and who was so wild and unmanageable that it was quite amusing to see her. "You naughty child!" cried the mother, and now she had not the time to kill Gerda. "She shall play with me," said the little robber child. "She shall give me her muff and her pretty frock. She shall sleep in my bed." And then she gave her mother another bite, so that she jumped and ran around with pain, and the robbers laughed and said, "Look how she is dancing with the little one." "I will go into the carriage," said the little robber maiden, and she would have her will, for she was very spoiled and very headstrong. She and Gerda got in, and then away they drove on, over the stumps of felled trees, deeper and deeper into the woods. The little robber maiden was as tall as Gerda, but stronger, broad-shouldered, and of a dark complexion. Her eyes were quite black. They looked almost melancholy. She embraced little Gerda and said, "It shall not kill you as long as I am not displeased with you. You are doubtless a princess." "No," said little Gerda, who then related all that had happened to her, and how much she cared about little Kay. The little robber maiden looked at her with a serious air, nodded her head slightly, and said, "They shall not kill you, even if I am angry with you. Then I will do it myself." And she dried Gerda's eyes, and put both her hands in the handsome muff, which was so soft and warm. At length the carriage stopped. They were in the midst of the courtyard of a robber's castle. It was full of cracks from top to bottom, and out of the openings magpies and rooks were flying, and the great bull dogs, each of which looked as if they could swallow a man, jumped up, but they did not bark, for that was forbidden. In the midst of the large, old, smoking hall burnt a great fire on the stone floor. The smoke disappeared under the stones, and had to seek its own egress. In an immense cauldron soup was boiling, and rabbits and hares were being roasted on a spit. "You shall sleep with me tonight, with all my animals," said the little robber maiden. They had something to eat and drink, and then went into a corner where straw and carpets were lying. Beside them, on laths and perches, sat nearly 100 pigeons, all asleep seemingly, but yet they moved a little when the robber maiden came. "They're all mine," said she, at the same time seizing one that was next to her by the legs, and shaking it so its wings fluttered. "Kiss it," cried the little girl, and flung the pigeon at Gerda's face. "Up there is the rabble of the wood," continued she, pointing to several laths, which were fastened before a hole high up in the wall. "That's the rabble. They would all fly away immediately if they were not well fastened in. And here is my dear old back." And she laid hold of the horns of a reindeer that had a bright copper ring around its neck and was tethered to the spot. "We're obliged to lock this fellow up too, or he would make an escape. Every evening I tickle his neck with my sharp knife. He is so frightened at it." And the little girl drew forth a long knife from a crack in the wall and let it glide over the reindeer's neck.
The poor animal kicked, and the girl laughed and pulled Gerda into bed with her. "Do you intend to keep your knife while you sleep?" asked Gerda, looking at it rather fearfully. "I always sleep with my knife," said the little robber maiden. "There's no knowing what will happen, but tell me now once more about little Kay and why you have started off in the wide world alone." And Gerda related it all from the very beginning. The wood pigeons cooed above in their cage, and the others slept. The little robber maiden wound her arm around Gerda's neck, held the knife in the other hand, and snored so loud that everyone could hear her. But Gerda could not close her eyes, for she did not know whether she was to live or die. The robbers sat around the fire, sang and drank, and the old female robber jumped about so, it was quite dreadful for Gerda to see her. Then the wood pigeon said, "Coo, coo! We have seen little Kay. A white hen carries his sledge. He himself sat in the carriage of the Snow Queen, who passed here, down just over the wood, as we lay in our nest. She blew upon us young ones, and all died except we two. Coo, coo!" "What is that you say up there?" cried little Gerda. "Where did the Snow Queen go to? Do you know anything about it?" "She is no doubt gone to Lapland, for there is always snow and ice there. Only ask the reindeer, who is tethered there?"
"Ice and snow is there. There it is, glorious and beautiful," said the reindeer. "One can spring about in large shining valleys. The Snow Queen has her summer tent there, but her fixed abode is high up the North Pole, on an island called Spitsbergen."
"Oh, Kay! Oh, poor little Kay!" sighed Gerda.
"Do you choose to be quiet?" said the robber maiden. "If you don't, I shall make you."
In the morning, Gerda told her all that the wood pigeons had said, and the little maiden looked very serious. But she nodded her head and said, "That's no matter, that's no matter. Do you know where Lapland lies?" she asked the reindeer. "Who should know better than I?" said the animal, and his eyes rolled in his head. "I was born and bred there, then I leapt about in the fields of snow."
"Listen," said the robber maiden to Gerda. "You see that the men are gone, but my mother is still here and will remain. However, towards the morning she takes a draught of the large flask, and then she sleeps a little. Then I will do something for you." Now she jumped out of bed, flew to her mother with her arms round her neck, pulling her by the beard, and said, "Good morrow, my own sweet nanny goat of a mother!" And her mother took a hold of her nose, and pinched it till it was red and blue. But this was all done out of pure love. When the mother had taken a sup at her flask, and was having a nap, the little robber maiden went up to the reindeer and said, "I should like very much to give you still many tickling with the sharp knife, for then you were so amusing. However, I will untether you and help you out, so that you may go back to Lapland. But you must make good use of your legs, and take this little girl for me to the palace of the Snow Queen, where her playfellow is. You have heard, I suppose, all she said, for she spoke loud enough, and you were listening." The reindeer gave a bound for joy. The robber maiden lifted up little Gerda, and took the precaution to bind her fast to the reindeer's back. She even gave her a small cushion to sit on. "Here is your worsted leggings, for it will be cold, but the muff I shall keep for myself, for it is so very pretty. But I do not wish you to be cold. Here is a pair of lime gloves of my mother's. They just reach up to your elbow. On with them! On with them! Now, you look about your hands just like my ugly old mother." And Gerda wept for joy. "I can't bear to see you fretting," said the little robber maiden. "This is the time when you ought to look pleased. Here are two loaves and ham for you, so you won't starve." The bread and meat were fastened to the reindeer's back. The little maiden opened the door, called in all the dogs, and then with her knife cut the rope that fastened the animal and said to him, "Now off with you, but take good care of the little girl." And Gerda stretched out her hands with the large wadded gloves toward the robber maiden and said, "Farewell!" And the reindeer flew on over bush and bramble through the great wood, over moor and heath, as fast as he could go. "Tcha! Tcha!" was heard in the sky. It was just as if somebody was sneezing. "Those are my old northern lights," said the reindeer. "Look how they gleam!" And on now he sped still quicker. Day and night he went. The loaves were consumed, and the ham too, and now they were in Lapland. Sixth story, The Lapland Woman and the Finland Woman. Suddenly, they stopped before a little house, which looked very miserable.
The roof reached the ground, and the door was so low that the family were obliged to creep upon their stomachs when they went in or out. Nobody was at home except an old Lapland woman, who was dressing fish by the light of an oil lamp, and the reindeer told her the whole of Gerda's history, but first all of his own, for that seemed to him of much greater importance. Gerda was so chilled that she could not speak. "Poor thing," said the Lapland woman, "you still have far to run. You have more than 100 miles to go before you get to Finland. There the Snow Queen has her country house, and burns blue lights every evening. I will give you a few words from me, which I will write on a dried haberdine, for paper I have none. You take this with you to the Finland woman, and she will be able to give you more information than I can." And with that, everybody, we're going to have to call it a day for Coco Club. We will finish the 6th and 7th story of the Snow Queen next week. Maybe we can find another sweet treat to make besides ice cream. I'll post it on Monday. And I hope that you enjoyed listening to Coco Club. Coco Club is brought to you by Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio. All the sounds in this recording are from freesound.org.